Get cash back every time you bought those things. Well, now you can. Introducing Discover Cashback Debit. Just open a Discover bank account and start earning 1% cash back on up to $3,000 in debit card purchases every month automatically. Plus, there are no monthly fees or minimum balances. Now you can get cash back on the way you like to pay. Open a Discover bank account and get the debit card with cash back. Go to discoverbank.com/debit. Limitations apply. Excludes money market accounts. Discover Bank, member FDIC.
Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and other top Democrats are pushing Attorney General Bill Barr to release a full, unredacted report from Special Counsel Robert Mueller. It remains unclear how much of that report will be released. Former Deputy Assistant Attorney General Professor John Yoo says he knows why Nancy Pelosi is pushing for this full report to be released.
Look, I think Nancy Pelosi's demand for the report right away is just a publicity stunt, but there's something worse behind it, which is, are we really willing to sacrifice the long-term, long-time rights of criminal suspects and witnesses who've long cooperated with law enforcement because of the secrecy provided by a grand jury? That's what Attorney General Barr is going through the report right now with his staff to delete or redact from the report.
Calls have been made to ban the word cyclist, and many are wondering if it's another example of political correctness or common sense. USA Radio Network's John Clemens has more.
Researchers at Queensland University of Technology, working with the University of Melbourne, Australia, conducted a survey finding some respondents had deliberately operated their vehicle closer to a bike rider. 17% said they used their vehicle to block a cyclist. 9% used their car to cut off a cyclist. The researchers said the word cyclist has become associated with negativity, with acts of aggression. So they're suggesting instead of cyclists, we say people who ride bikes. I'm John Clemens.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. John Tesh has sold over 8 million CDs of instrumental piano music. He's the former co-host of Entertainment Tonight. His syndicated radio show, Intelligence for Your Life, airs on about 400 stations, and his new album is Big Band. John Tesh, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
So, Big Band, what made you decide to choose the Big Band era for this album? Is it the economic depression and the constant threat of war?
It could be. I was born in 1952, and so when my dad came back from World War II before I was born, he served off the coast of Okinawa on an amphibious assault craft.
Wow.
And so he wouldn't talk much about what happened, but what he did do is he brought back music. He had a lot of albums and ideas for what he wanted to listen to because they listened on Armed Forces Radio. And it was a lot of Count Basie and Duke Ellington and Benny Goodman, Artie Shaw. And so this is what they listened to on the ship to keep their spirits up. So he loved that music. So it was always playing in our house. And then when I was in elementary school, I was given a trumpet. You didn't have any choice. They selected you and gave you an instrument when you were in first grade. And we would learn these songs as, you know, second grade through sixth grade, and, you know, in the mood, everything. And so that's what I was brought up on. And when we decided what we did, we wanted to do a new PBS special, we said, well, let's go back and get our roots because my bass player had the same situation with his dad. And so we worked on it for about 2 years, you know, testing songs in our live concerts, seeing what the audience had to say about it. And we started getting people dancing in the aisles. We thought, well, maybe we're onto something here. Let's bring back the 30s.
It's amazing stuff. And by the way, I'll just add that there was an amazing memoir that I've read recently called Goodbye Darkness that involves a historian, William Manchester, who served on Okinawa. Not at all surprised that your dad didn't talk much about it because it sounds like a really hellish experience.
After my dad, John Sr., after he passed away, my mom handed me his diary.
Oh.
And in this public television special, Big Band Live, there's actually I read the diary on stage with pictures of him and some of the other folks, you know, in our band that sent in pictures, and it was a day by day account journal of what they went through on the ship, and it was it's no wonder they didn't like to talk about it.
Yeah, not at all. We're speaking with John Tesh. His new album is a Big Band. The way I got into this music personally, my grandfather sent me tapes when I was a kid. I'm kind of the next generation. I got into it that way. As it happened, he was a frogman in World War II. Which of these artists of this era really gripped you the most? Obviously, your dad had some favorites. So were they the ones that you ended up liking and taking some of their music in this experience?
I shouldn't say obscure, because in the jazz world, they're not obscure, but if you say Burt Kempfert Orchestra, to most people, they'll go, what are you talking about? If you say, you know, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, yes, of course, or even, you know, Benny Goodman, but the Burt Kempfert Orchestra was, we listened to them all the time because they would play the big band tunes, and also they had these great Christmas albums out, but they were using electric bass. And I just thought that sounded so cool, you know, the way they was, because nobody was doing that with big band back then. You're always looking, whether you want to admit it or not, you're always looking for somebody to emulate in the craft that you're, the art that you're interested in. And for me, it really was, Count Basie. You know, I thought he was totally cool. You know, when you look at the Duke Ellington story and look at him, you know, the fact that he was on his deathbed and he was still composing, you know, these guys were just so into it. And, you know, we're getting ready to go out and do the tour. We're sort of always on tour. And we get in these tour buses with the bunks, you know, and the satellite TV and everything.
Right.
And people are like, oh, my gosh, you have to ride the bus. Well, you know, go back and look at what these guys used to do. And it was, sitting upright in a terrible, you know, rickety old bus.
Right.
One-nighters, and then you know, the African-American musicians couldn't even stay in the same hotel.
Going through the South on many occasions in their tour,
For sure. So yeah, Count Basie, I think he's a, you know, he's just a totally cool guy, and I, my whole life I wanted to be a drummer, and so, you know, Gene Krupa, if you can't find any, you know, YouTube videos of Gene Krupa, he was just the coolest of the cool jazz drummer.
Oh, he's a real manic guy. He was Keith Moon before Keith Moon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And if you really want to see, you know, the king of the Savoy and many other venues, you look up Chick Webb. You know, who was a guy who had a dwarfism syndrome. He was really a tiny guy, and his feet didn't even touch the ground barely. But when he played those drums, it was crazy.
For people who haven't seen it yet, what can we look forward to in your PBS special and as you're out on tour there with the big band? Because this isn't just an album. You're out there with the whole brass section. What can they see?
Well, you know, we did this, and I know there's a loose comparison here. I grew up, of course, with the Beatles and the Doors and all those guys, and I used to go, you know, see them, you know, on Long Island, and we used to, you know, learned all their songs. And the way those bands... And even Jethro Tull, and yes, after them, the way they recorded the record was they weren't studio artists, so they would go out and they would play. I mean, especially the Beatles, they would play like 300 dates before they even considered recording a record, you know. And they were always writing when they were on the road, in the bus, on the plane, and all that. And so we decided, why don't we do it that way? Especially since I'm not really a trained singer, and I had to. I mean, I sing in my worship band in church, and I, you know, I sang as a kid, but I really had to sort of get back into it and figure out what I was going to do. So I said, I need 2 years. This is what I said to Tim. I need 2 years to figure this out. So we. We did about 100 concerts in 2 years, and we were doing sort of under the radar. You know, we would play half the concert would be my usual stuff, you know, the new age neoclassical stuff, and the other half would be big band music. And we put a video camera on stage behind the drums, pointed at the audience, and we figured out which songs they came alive to. And that's really how we figured out, you know, which songs to put on the record and wow. which songs I'd be comfortable singing and performing. So the way when you see the special and when you see one of our live shows, it is there's a lot of joy on stage. We all are a little bit older, and we really do recognize the true gift that it is when somebody buys a ticket and comes to one of our concerts. And so we will stay there until we have just lifted people up and made sure that they've had a good time.
Maybe this is popular in the older crowd, but I tell you, there are a lot of people such as myself who are a little bit younger who really appreciate the music of that era, in spite of the fact that, I those kids these days, when they hear music where they actually have to touch each other in order to dance, maybe it's something of a challenge.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because there was some group, like Parents Television Council or something, did a study about, you know, how many, disgusting words, suggestive words, whatever, curse words there are. You know, per hour on a contemporary hit radio station, hip hop station, and so they called them. They said, you know, every hour there are 122 reproductive messages. and a reproductive message back in 1936 was basically, you know, just the way you look tonight. You know, that was it. You know, and so. Usually, you're probably a musicologist, music aficionado. Usually, if it's not Michael Bublé, the people who get this are people who know something about music, because you know that first of all, the lyrics are very they're genuine and they're almost goofy. They're adorable.
Yeah, they're earnest.
They're
straightforward.
That's a great word. They're earnest lyrics. And secondly, the melodies are very singable. Okay, and the third thing is. Put this on the stereo and try to play it. Try to figure it out on the guitar or the piano. As wonderful as they were, these are not Beatles and Doors tunes.
Yeah.
This is more like Sgt. Pepper than the first album. But, I mean, it's very, very complicated music. And I think that's why the kids liked it so much back in the Depression era, is that not only could they dance to it and sing along, but it was different every night. You know what I mean?
It's a very different era, but there's something basic, something elemental that still appeals about the music of that time that nothing that's entered the mainstream of popular culture, I think, has ever superseded, at least not to this point. John Tesh, Big Band, thank you for being on Now It's the News.
My pleasure.
All the best, sir. You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
Go to nowitsthenews.com.
American investors lost $3.7 trillion of net worth in the fourth quarter of 2018. When your portfolio's value decreases right before or early in your retirement, it can have a crippling effect. It's called sequence of returns risk, and it's a risk you simply cannot afford. We're Sound Income Strategies, and we're on a mission to help hardworking Americans transform their hard-earned savings into steady, predictable retirement income. Call now for free, no-obligation information to help you get started on your way to steady, predictable retirement income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Investment advisory services offered through Sound Income Strategies, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Let's transform that risk into income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Sound Income Strategies, powered by the Retirement Income Store.
This message is brought to you by Centria Autism. Autism spectrum disorder is a behavioral health condition, increasingly common in all our communities. Between 65,000 and 70,000 new children will meet the diagnostic criteria for autism in 2019. Recent studies reveal that approximately 30% of children with autism are not receiving evidence-based behavioral treatment. Dr. Stephen Marin, Chief Medical Officer, Centria Autism.
The treatment of any child with autism should be individualized and holistic, with the goal of helping every child have the best developmental experience possible. By taking a more clinically integrated approach to the care path using applied behavior analysis, or ABA, we can improve a child's communication, living, and behavioral skills.
For more information, visit www.centriaautism.com. That's www.centriaautism.com.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Today we're speaking with Andrew Keene. He's the author of Digital Vertigo, How Today's Online Social Revolution is Dividing, Diminishing, and Disorienting Us. Andrew Keene, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you, Derek, for having me.
In this book, are you suggesting that I shouldn't be on Twitter while updating my Facebook status and sending an email at the dinner table?
Well, it's not really one of those kind of books. I'm on Twitter. I'm not on Facebook. The book is an attempt to make a broader, deeper sense of what's happening with social media. So I try to fit it into some very profound social, cultural, and economic changes that are happening in the 21st century, and fit the emergence of companies like Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn to that. This is not a book saying, yeah, you need to limit your social media activity, although hopefully after people have read it, they will probably be less enthusiastic about flashing all their most intimate personal data on the network. It's also a warning about where all these public networks are going, where we reveal more and more about ourselves. I fear that we're losing whatever it is that defines our humanity.
How much of a danger is that, basically giving ourselves away online? And do you think that it's particularly dangerous for young people to be doing that when they haven't yet adapted a sense of what's theirs and what's the public's in the traditional sense of that?
That's a good question, Sarah. I would not want to ghettoize this issue into young people versus old people. Certainly young people have embraced this medium, but so have old people. And in some ways, I think young people are using it more intelligently, actually sort of reinventing their identities for the network and carving out a degree of privacy. The dangers are two or threefold. The first danger is that private companies like Facebook and Google and Twitter are learning more and more about us in our age of big data, or in my book I call it 3.0. We've become the product. And I think that's very demoralizing and depressing. I think we need to push back and understand that most of us don't want to be the product, and we either need to start paying for services which guarantee our privacy, or perhaps even limit our use of social media. The political dimensions are also very worrying. Social media technologies are now being used by many authoritarian states to spy on their citizens. And indeed, even in the West, in the US and in the UK, the government is looking somewhat greedily in the data space and seeking to acquire more and more information about all of us. And I'm not comfortable about that. But of course, the biggest danger is that when we tell the world everything about ourselves, our habits, our desires, our jobs, our aspirations, our whereabouts, what we're eating, where we're driving to, we are thinning out who we are as human beings. We're losing our depth, our complexity, and I think that's the most worrying thing of all.
We're speaking with Andrew Keen, the author of Digital Vertigo. You use Twitter, but not Facebook. Why?
Well, the book is, my book, Digital Vertigo, recognizes the paradox that these platforms we increasingly need to promote ourselves. I'm on Twitter, and I'll admit it publicly, because as a writer, I have to promote myself. It's free publicity. And even that the cover of my book plays with imagery from Twitter in a clever, amusing way. I'm not on Facebook because it's one step too far. I used to be on it. But I found it so annoying, less invasive than annoying. Every time I'd go on it, I would be bombarded with updates from people I barely knew who were embarrassing me. Even sometimes some of my friends would be posting photos of their children or saying inappropriate things. So Facebook for me is unacceptable. I'm a Facebook resistor. Some people might say in terms of my my argument, well, everyone can be a Facebook resistor if they want, and leave people alone who want to be on Facebook. There's a little bit of truth to that, but on the other hand, Facebook is becoming, and that's why it's valued at about $100 billion, it's becoming the working platform for the big data internet. So increasingly, it's a gateway to more and more social services. So I can be off Twitter, off Facebook because it helps my brand and it's a funny story to tell on the radio. But for more and more people, it's actually pretty hard to be off Facebook.
So you're basically saying that Facebook is an internet gateway drug?
Well, it's not a drug, but certainly a gateway. In the same way as in the Web 2.0 age, Google was the gateway. In those days, we used to talk about the internet as an economy of links. Today, with Facebook, we have a Web 3.0 economy of likes. The logic, the transportation on the web is driven by likes, by Facebook likes. And so I've always argued that you have to be either really rich or really poor to afford not to be on Facebook, or a dissenter like myself, a professional dissenter.
We're speaking with Andrew Keen, the author of Digital Vertigo. What do we gain and what do we lose by being a part of this world?
Well, what we gain is incredible connectivity. What we gain is being able to connect with people around the world, making friends online, meeting people we otherwise wouldn't have met. I can't deny that. That's obvious. as I said, I think what we most lose is privacy. In my book, I talk a lot about the way in which in Silicon Valley, and I'm a Silicon Valley entrepreneur, so that's where I'm from, most of the leading entrepreneurs and pundits have pretty much written off privacy. They said it's dead. It's like gas lights or the horse and cart. It's something that once exists and no longer is relevant. I think that that's a profound mistake. We can't afford to shed privacy. We can't afford, as human beings, to live in the full glare of the network, particularly as more and more of us are going online. You know, in a few years, all of us are going to be on this network. In a few years, the network will exist not only on incredibly powerful handheld devices, but in our clothing, in our eyeglasses. Everywhere we look, we will see the network. We're living on it. It's become the platform of life in the 21st century. And I don't want human beings to lose their complexity, their depth, their blood and guts. And I fear that that's what's happening. The crowd, mob rule, groupthink is taking over on the social web. And I think what we most need to do is carve out a space where individuals can retire from that public world. It's happened before. I write about this in my book. It happened in the industrial age. John Stuart Mill wrote a very famous book in the middle of the 19th century called On Liberty, which was protecting the rights of the individual, the free-thinking, innovative individual, in the face of the collectivism of the industrial age. We have a new threat, a new collectivist threat. It's the digital threat or the cult of the social, and we need to protect the individual in a similar way. That doesn't mean trashing our iPhones, but it does mean understanding that we need to push back a little bit and carve out the space for that most critical of things, the individual.
We've been speaking with Andrew Keene, the author of Digital Vertigo, How Today's Online Social Revolution is Dividing, Diminishing, and Disorienting Us. Andrew Keene, thanks for being with us on Now It's the News today.
Well, thank you, Derek. That was a fun interview.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare, and MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is around $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-90-BIBLE. That's 855-90-BIBLE. 855-90-BIBLE.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Linda McMahon, head of the Small Business Administration, is planning to announce as soon as Friday that she's stepping down. McMahon is expected to rejoin the private sector and also join President Trump's 2020 re-election campaign. The Border Patrol and the Yuma, Arizona sector announced they would be releasing family units of illegal aliens that were caught trying to enter the U.S. illegally into the city of Yuma. The Yuma Sector Border Patrol is having to reallocate resources to handle the high number of illegal aliens entering the region illegally. Yuma Mayor Doug Nichols says,
"We want to make sure our citizens of Yuma are safe, but we also want to make sure that the humanitarian needs of people are addressed, because I don't believe it's the culture of people in Yuma. I don't believe it's the culture of the United States to let people go hungry and homeless."
This does only affect family units that were caught. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s, but which form should you take?
fish oil, or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you, we'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil, it's both. And now, it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now, 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair, and we're going to step away from the comic for a moment because we have something serious to deal with. We're going to speak with Kevin Sorbo. He's Hercules. He's most famous for Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, and Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda, and he has written a book called True Strength, My Journey from Hercules to Mere Mortal, and How Nearly Dying Saved My Life. Kevin Sorbo, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
So, you were Hercules, one of the most famous TV actors in the world. What happened to you in 1997 in September?
Well, I shot the series for 7 years, down in New Zealand, and that was my second home away from home. And at the end of season five, I started having very strange sensations running down my left arm, and it was bugging me. I mean, usually I didn't pay attention to stuff. I was a jock, and of course on Hercules, I was working 14-hour days, lifting 2 hours a day. I mean, I was in my own little world and having a good time, and I kind of, any bumps and bruises, I got them all the time. I didn't pay attention to them. But this one was really starting to bug me because I also had my fingers on my left hand from the middle finger over to my pinky were cold, and they were getting colder and colder. And it was very strange. Like I couldn't get any blood flow in there or something. It was just really strange. Called my doctor in L.A., and he said, you may have smashed your ulnar nerve. And I didn't pay much attention to it after that. I said, oh, okay, I get it. And I guess that happens a lot to hockey players and football players where you hit your funny bone especially hard, and you can squish a nerve that has those same type of symptoms. Well, when I got back to L.A., at the end of season five, it got to a point that was bugging me so much. I had a 3.5-month hiatus. I was going to go start a new movie, but I went to see my doctor first, and he found a lump in my shoulder. And he goes, you know what? I want to biopsy that thing. I don't know what that is, and I think we should check it out. And I went to my chiropractor from there because I wanted him to work on my arm as well. And I've been seeing this guy for 8 years, and he never cracks my neck because he knows I don't like my neck cracked. Well, I'm laying on the table, and he's working on my arm, and I hear a voice say, don't let him crack your neck. I heard this voice twice, and I didn't pay attention to it. He cracks my neck, and I said, why'd you do that? And he said, I felt you needed it. And he goes, well, I don't like it. And I left, and 2 minutes later, I'm in my car driving back to my fiance's house, and I had two very loud pops in the back of my brain.
Wow.
Very distinct. And also, my vision went crazy. My balance went crazy. I had pulled over the road. I didn't know what was going on. I don't know how I made it to my fiance's house. I called her up. She said, let me pick you up. I said, no, I'll come to you. And by the time I got there, to make a longer story as short as I possibly can, I suffered two more episodes inside my brain, and one of them made my speech become very heavily slurred. And that's when I went into just shock. I looked at her, and she said, I have to get to the hospital now. And I knew at that moment that I had suffered strokes. I got to the hospital. My left arm, the bump in my left arm was an aneurysm that had exploded. It sent hundreds and hundreds of clots in my arm. My arm was turning blue. The doctors worked frantically to get blood thinners and all these other different things into me to save my arm. But then after they took the MRI, they could see that I did suffer three strokes. The fourth one, my speech disappeared. Thank God it dissolved. But the other three stayed with me. And one was in my vision center and one was in my balance center. And I spent the next 3.5 months after canceling the movie, which I couldn't do, learning how to walk again. And the vision, all these years later, the vision is still what it is. I've lost 10% of vision in both eyes. But it took me 3 full years to really get back to feeling normal again. The first year was really tough on me, and it was a long, long recovery process.
obviously something like that instantly has an effect on your personal life. It just changes your personal landscape instantly. What sort of effect did it have on your career, on your role as Hercules?
Well, that was obviously the biggest concern with the studio. I mean, the year before that, we just passed Baywatch as the most watched TV show in the world. We're in 176 countries.
Wow.
They had 2 years left of my contract, so, you know, I always want to say Hollywood has compassion, but they really don't. But it is show business, and they wanted the show to go on. So they hid the fact that I had the strokes, which is fine with me. I didn't want the world to see that weakness either, and which I viewed it as anyway. And, you know, they let out the fact that an aneurysm, and that's all people knew through the news and outlets and everything else. So after my 3 months of rehab in Henderson, Nevada, where I had my home, I was able to get on the plane and get back to New Zealand to start season six. But I went from 14 hours a day to 1 hour a day to not working out anymore because I couldn't. I showed up on the set, and my crew was just shocked. They knew I was very ill. They just didn't realize how well I had dropped about 15 pounds of muscle just because of lack of use of my body that way. And I was a completely different guy. You know, it took me 2 full years in the series, the last 2 seasons, to work up to working 8 or 9 hours a day in the show. And the studio did a great job of covering for me and bringing in stunt casting and working a lot of flashback shows and episodes that we've already shot and just sort of keeping the show alive. And I was grateful for that, you know, because I didn't want everybody to know what happened to me. I think had the strokes got out right away, my career probably would have been over. But, you know, obviously I went on to do Andromeda for 5 seasons, and I've done about 30, 35 movies since then. So I've proven that I can still work again. But it did. It took me 3 full years after the strokes to feel 100% again.
We're speaking with Kevin Sorbo. He's the author of True Strength, My Journey from Hercules to Mere Mortal, and How Nearly Dying Saved My Life. In that process, that 3-year process of getting back to where you were physically before, what was going on in your personal life? What were you thinking about? Obviously, there must have been thoughts that maybe this is the end. How did that affect your relationship with those around you and your thoughts about the spiritual?
Well, you know, number one, the voice that told him, When I was laying on that table, and I hear that voice inside my head say, "Do not let him crack your neck twice," was odd enough because he had never cracked my neck. He knows I don't like my neck cracked. When a voice said, "Don't let him crack your neck," and I hear again, "Do not let him crack your neck," I thought, "What is that?" And of course, you know, I realized afterwards, you know, to me, I mean, that was God. God was giving me a warning. That was that inside voice we all have. We can put whatever name we want to it, but I'm a spiritual man. I believe in God my whole life. I believe in Jesus. I'm a Christian and proud of it. And when that happened, I was like, you know, what did you learn from this? Well, I learned from now on I'm going to listen to that voice because it changed me drastically. I mean, I was worried. Certainly, I was engaged at the time, and I thought my fiancé would leave me. I was like, I don't know where I'm going to be with this. Am I going to be an invalid the rest of my life? Am I going to be worrying about balance issues the rest of my life? Am my vision going to be screwed up like this the rest of my life? I mean, there are all kinds of things, all kinds of insecurities, and panic, anxiety attacks were developed, depression, anger, frustration, all these things. I went through all the stages I think anybody and everybody goes through when they have a life-altering illness or, you know, catastrophe that happens to them personally. And I think that was the biggest reason I wanted this book out there, was to show people, you know what, I had something that happens to somebody that is totally opposite of where I was. I mean, doctors look at people who are obese, people who smoke, drink, high blood pressure, diabetes, all those things, high cholesterol, all those things that are certainly places that can put people to be victims for strokes. I had none of that stuff, and yet I still suffered strokes. And, you know, I became very like a hypochondriac. Every bump and bruise and everything I had, I said, oh, my God, this is it. It's going to happen again. And it took me a long time to get past that, to struggle past that. But I think, you know, I'm a very strong-willed person. And I did end up marrying my fiancée. We've been together for 14 years, and we've got 3 beautiful kids. And, you know, she was instrumental in pushing me as well to get better. And as great as modern medicine is, I mean, certainly the doctors, they coiled off the aneurysm, the blood clots were gone. They told me, you know, that the best you can expect is you'll have 8 months after your recovery. That's, you know, if, you know, you still have this and that going on, you'll have to live with that the rest of your life. Well, after 8 months, I still wasn't doing great. And I knew, you know what, there's no way this is it. There's no way that they know what my body can do and what my brain can do. And, It did. It took a long time, but I think the mixture of my positive attitude, throwing in Eastern medicine such as yoga and meditation and acupuncture, I think all of those things combined helped to make me have a comeback.
Kevin Sorbo, Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, and True Strength, My Journey from Hercules to Mere Mortal and How Nearly Dying Saved My Life. Kevin, thank you for being with us today.
I thank you for your time.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
I'm Will Flitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
Wouldn't it be great to see your windows in a whole new light? Do it right. Call your local neighborhood experts. Budget Blinds. You'll get beautiful style and personalized service for every budget. We bring the showroom right to your home, so you can choose from hundreds of blinds, shades, shutters, and drapes. Plus smart home window coverings you control with the touch of a button. And with Budget Blinds, we do it all for you. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy. There's a reason why Budget Blinds is the number one provider of custom window coverings in North America. When we say we have style and service for every budget, we really mean it. So let's get your home a whole lot of gorgeous. Get your free consultation right at home. Just go online to budgetblinds.com or call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS. Call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS for your free consultation right at home. Now that's beautiful. At participating independently owned and operated franchises only. Ask for details.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Retail Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Pat Boone is a music legend who sold almost 50 million records, has 38 top 40 radio hits to his name, and was named the number 10 artist for most top chart hits from 1955 to 1996. His new album is Pat Boone Sings a Tribute to the Ink Spots. Pat Boone, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you for being here, sir.
Good to be with you.
So when I was about 12 years old, my grandfather sent me a set of tapes with music from the 1950s, and one of the songs in that collection was Love Letters in the Sand, one of your biggest hits.
It was the biggest.
Maybe something of an anomaly for a 12-year-old in the 1980s, but nevertheless, something that I greatly enjoyed. Given the prevalence of Twitter, as you know, today, do you think it's possible to fit a love letter into Twitter?
Yes, sure I do. Yes.
It's a very different era, but the music seems to have changed quite a bit over the years. But I suppose, in the words of the song, the fundamental things apply. Why was it that you decided to record a tribute to the Ink Spots in particular?
Well, I had just, I'm like you, remembering music from my growing up days, had always loved their songs and the way they did them. Songs like If I Didn't Care and You Always Hurt the One You Love and even Java Jive. I loved them all. And so I, my daughter Debbie, her daughter, gave me a CD that she found somewhere. And kids these days, they'll go back into an era way before their time and just look for treasures and things that they love and they share with each other, which is wonderful. And so they gave me this CD of Ink Spots hits. And I thought, man, there's millions of people in this country that don't remember, maybe never heard these guys and their great songs and their great stylings. And so I said, I'm going to do a tribute to them. And then I thought, well, the Ink Spots themselves are gone. I've got to be, there's got to be a group feel to this. And so I remembered loving so much Take Six, that group out of college in Mississippi. Brian McKnight was one of them in the beginning. And I contacted them, and they loved the Ink Spots, and they agreed that we'd do this album together. So now we've done this album that in many ways sounds like the original Ink Spots, but we, of course, I don't sound like their lead singer, but I do swap off lead vocals with a guy who does, Mark Kibbe of Take Six. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the harmonies of the Ink Spots are there, but then the Take Six enlarges on those harmonies and does surprising things that the Ink Spots never thought of, but would I know approve today. So it's a very entertaining, retro kind of an album, but contemporary in that it's freshly made and will be new to millions of people.
Yeah, hopefully this will give people an opportunity to not only enjoy the music that you and Take Six have created, but also go back and listening to some of the original songs. One of my favorite things, I think, about the Ink Spots was their bass singer's kind of mid-song soliloquy, reemphasizing the theme
all
of
right.
the song.
He always said, oh, honey child, you know if I love you, if I didn't love you, would I hurt this way? And I wasn't going to do that, but I did it my way. Mm-hmm. And again, I think they would approve.
I think so. You know, listening to these songs, I think it definitely has that that stamp about it. You know, I know you get into politics sometimes, and I wanted to throw out a question here. Do you think that I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire could be repurposed as a song to encourage Middle East peace?
Yeah, that's except that it winds up the rest of the phrase, I just want to start a little flame in your heart. But, yeah, the flame of a desire for peace, yes, and for brotherhood and understanding and respect for each other could put out some of the larger fires. Yeah, that would be nice to see if you could rework the lyric.
Well, if the flames stay in your heart as opposed to spread to the streets, I think that's pretty important right
that's
there.
That's right. Yeah.
We're speaking with Pat Boone. He's a music legend, has sold almost 50 million records throughout his accomplished career, and his current album is Pat Boone Sings a Tribute to the Ink Spots. I remember, it must have been 20, 25 years ago when I was a kid growing up, seeing you on several guest appearances on the Beverly Hillbillies. Now, from what I'm reading in some of these press releases, you've lived in the same house in Beverly Hills for 40 years now. Have you taken over for Jed Clampett?
It's more than 40. It's 52 years
wow.
now.
Wow.
In the house at a very prominent corner in Beverly Hills, right next to the Beverly Hills Hotel. And the tour buses all know where we are. They stop every time I'm coming or going out of the driveway. So often there's a bus full of tourists waving, taking pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But, I guess we are. I brought my family to California via a detour to New Jersey and New York when I was in school at Columbia University. But when we moved in out here 52 years ago,
wow.
in 1960, I resolved we were going to raise our kids and our family by what I call Tennessee standards. And I guess so that means you could really call us the legitimate Beverly Hillbillies.
There you go. And you got a cement pond in the background and everything?
Yes, I do. And I'm in it about four mornings a week.
That's fantastic. When I was in college, an album came through to my college radio station, a heavy metal album recorded by you.
Yes.
I thought it was a fantastic send-up. Others didn't take it so lightly. Do you think it's hard to be funny in the music industry?
Well, no, it depends. Well, it's certainly not the easiest thing because not many people have a great sense of humor that would translate. Certainly Weird Al Yankovic has made a career of that.
Absolutely.
But in my case, that album, though I understood that there was surprise and therefore humor connected to the idea of Pat Boone doing heavy metal songs in any way. The reason I did it with my own musicians was that they had convinced me there were some really good quality songs underneath all that clamor and cacophony and screaming and all that. And sure enough, when I listened to the lyrics, I found a bunch of very good songs and even good melodies. So what we did was add the heavy metal of trombones, saxophones, and trumpets, and brought in great musicians and great arrangers and did big band jazz versions of those songs. And I was very serious about the music, treating them as music. In fact, Metallica, when Alice Cooper and I gave them the award on the American Music Awards for hard rock heavy metal, they were doing these mock bows to me, calling me their new lead vocalist, because I did Enter Sandman and treated it as legitimate music, which I found it to be. It's really that whole foreboding, ominous sound is really about a father putting his son to bed and using the time-honored scare tactic of scaring him about what might be under the bed or overhead or on the walls, warning him he better stay in bed or something's going to get him. And even saying the good night, now I lay me down to sleep prayer with his son. I mean, that's Big Bad Metallica's song.
It was an amazing confluence because you really caught people's attention, especially with the cover and the way that you did up. I mean, it seems like some people reacted to it negatively, but I think in spite of that, you gained a huge new audience of folks about my age who had never thought about listening to your music before.
Yeah, I mean, everywhere I went for a while, there were both college kids and hard tattooed bikers with ponytails with fists raising. Hey, Boone, keep singing that heavy metal, man. Keep going, dude. And so, I mean, I had an audience that knew nothing or little about me and couldn't care less, but all of a sudden they were fans. And, you know, I felt really good about that. It was worth getting kicked off Christian TV for about 2 months until they understood what it was about and that I had chosen songs that had perfectly legitimate lyrics, nothing offensive about them.
Well, I'll tell you what, with whether it's the older stuff that you like from the 1950s or whether it's the newer stuff that you caught on to is as a result of some of these efforts that you made recently, you're an amazing musical legend, and I strongly encourage people to give a listen, especially if they're fans of the Inkspots, which I am. That's actually another one of the albums that my grandfather sent me.
When
I was a young person. So I glommed onto that as well. I went through a whole big band phase as a youth.
Well, I'm glad to know it, and I appreciate the notice, and I hope folks will take your advice.
I hope so, too. We've been speaking with Pat Boone, 50 million records almost, 38 top 40 radio hits. His album right now is Pat Boone Sings a Tribute to the Inkspots, featuring Take Six. Pat Boone, thank you so much for being with us today.
And I thank you.
Happy train. Happy train.
That's all the time we have this week on Now It's the News. Now It's the News was created and produced by Derek Blair. For more information, go to nowitsthenews.com. Follow us on Twitter at nowitsthenews. And until next week, I remain yours truly, Derek Blair.
Happy train.
This message is brought to you by Centria Autism. Autism spectrum disorder is a behavioral health condition, increasingly common in all our communities. Between 65,000 and 70,000 new children will meet the diagnostic criteria for autism in 2019. Recent studies reveal that approximately 30% of children with autism are not receiving evidence-based behavioral treatment. Dr. Stephen Marin, Chief Medical Officer, Centria Autism.
The treatment of any child with autism should be individualized and holistic, with the goal of helping every child have the best developmental experience possible. By taking a more clinically integrated approach to the care path using applied behavior analysis, or ABA, we can improve a child's communication, living, and behavioral skills.
For more information, visit www.centriaautism.com. That's www.centriaautism.com.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump is in South Florida visiting Lake Okeechobee and touring some of the aging infrastructure that's being updated.
I want to just thank the Army Corps of Engineers. It's been fantastic. I said, let's go. We need a wall also on the border. You know that, right? I'm looking at all these walls. I'm saying southern border, too. Don't forget our southern border. And we're right now building a lot of wall on the southern border.
Record flooding in the Midwest and Great Plains could cause at least $3 billion in damage to the region, and more than one-third of that tally is from agriculture. Dale Reef is a farmer in Iowa, and he's concerned about getting a crop in for this year.
We're still optimistic that hopefully we'll get a plant a crop this coming year and just see how it all plays out.
Reef was speaking there on Fox News and says any planting that would take place would be in about 3 weeks. Follow us on Facebook at USA Radio. This is USA Radio News.
It's amazing but true. When it comes to one of America's biggest household expenditures, health care, a lot of people think they've got no choice. People are used to thinking we have to do it this way, but they don't. Yes, you have the freedom to choose an alternative with your health care. It's MediShare, and it costs way less than the alternatives. The typical family saves $500 a month, not a year, a month. And if you're single, this can save you a lot too. And let's face it, a big reason MediShare is 400,000 people strong, it just works. They've shared over $3 billion in medical bills, so they can help share your needs too. Joining MediShare for so many people is one of those things that makes you say, why didn't I do this before? So yes, the time has come for something better. Look into joining MediShare and see why so many people are opting out of the old way and into the new. Why not look into this? Just call 855-90-PSALM. That's 855-90-PSALM. 855-90-PSALM.
Linda McMahon, head of the Small Business Administration, is planning to announce as soon as Friday that she's stepping down. McMahon is expected to rejoin the private sector and also join President Trump's 2020 reelection campaign. A Republican from the East Bronx who says she's fed up with Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says she's going to run to try to unseat the Democratic Socialist in 2020. Ruth Papazian joins Fox News and says running Amazon out of New York was the last straw.
Just looking at the Amazon situation, she parachuted into a congressional district she doesn't even represent and led the parade of grandstanding politicians to tank the deal. Now, instead of fighting to keep Amazon out of Queens, she should have been fighting to bring Amazon to the Bronx. Warehousing is one of our major industries here, and Amazon needs warehouses. She could have been fighting to bring warehousing jobs to the Bronx.
Papazian also says she understands the uphill battle she's facing. This is USA Radio News.
At Indeed, we believe a resume is a great way to see an overview of a candidate. But you're not hiring a resume, you're hiring a person. That's why we offer tools to give you a deeper sense of the people behind the paper, like skill tests, which let you actually see a candidate's abilities in action to make sure they're a good fit for the job. See beyond the resume with Indeed. Increase your visibility to great candidates with a free sponsored job upgrade on your first job posting at Indeed.com/promo. The sponsored job upgrade is a $50 sponsored job credit. Users are charged once the credit is spent or it expires. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
High-level meetings are being held next week in Washington, D.C. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has a preview.
NATO's turning 70 next week. The anniversary will be marked when foreign ministers from 29 member states gather in Washington. Yesterday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, speaking in Washington, was asked about the president's continued claims that many of those nations are not paying their fair share towards NATO. Pompeo says there's nothing wrong with reviewing the current state of NATO to determine if changes need to be made.
It is worthy to go reevaluate whether the first principles of NATO, right, the founding doctrine, if that charter is being adhered to, if the roles are right, if we've got it structured for 2019 and beyond, and we've done that, whether it was the UN Human Rights Council or the International Criminal Court. These are institutions that we need to stare at. We've been accused of not liking multilateral organizations. That's just not true.
Pompeo was speaking at the National Review Institute's Ideas Summit in Washington, D.C.
Rockland County, New York Executive Ed Day says the county's state of emergency, which bans children who don't have measles vaccinations from public places, seems to be encouraging local families to get their kids vaccinated.
And we're giving them a reason, in particular, beyond the medical reasons. We have upcoming holidays in two major faiths in this county. It's the time to do this is now, whether you be Christian or Jewish.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.